Hey, babe. We got you.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all in between, welcome to The Most High Show. I'm your host, Christian. Joining me in the studio in the decadent seats of service, we have Chad D. Smith in the building. We have Sarah with a capital H.
For Hellion.
Yeah.
We have an in-studio audience. Leslie's doing quality control. Dylan is on the ones and twos. We got Liam here, some other folks. And this is an episode we like to call Questions from a Normie. And it's our first time doing this kind of episode. Leslie is very curious. Curious Leslie. And so she has a lot of questions. Still after all these years from being married to an addict.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
So she's given us a bunch of questions. They're in a hat. We're going to pull them out randomly, and we're going to answer them to the best of our ability. And if we don't have an answer, we're going to cut to our in-studio audience. Or Dylan's got a camera on him, too. So we've put Dylan's nice. Got six cameras on and six audio inputs, and we're hoping for the best. So.
It's a good chance that somebody might have an answer.
Yeah. All right, Sarah, you are the...
Am I drawing all of them?
You're the maid of honor here.
You are.
Maiden of honor.
Well, how are we doing it? Are we going to draw one question and then she'll answer the question?
Yeah, and we'll all answer the question.
We'll all answer each question. Okay.
Guess who was right, Chad?
You're always right, Sarah. I know. Thank I'm not new to this. Go ahead.
Wait, but are we going in order? I think you should do the first one.
Oh. No, you're the hat. You pick the questions.
Okay.
The hat holder.
Okay. What is the best advice you can give to your loved one when you were in your active addiction?
Don't look at me.
Hey, ask that again.
What is the best advice you can give to your loved one when you were in your active addiction?
Okay.
So if you could go back in time and, like, at your sober self talking to your actively addicted self and that partner.
Say, tell that.
What would you tell that partner to do in the situation?
Oh. Not just partners.
It says loved one.
Loved one. Okay.
What about your love to zero? It's my boat.
That's a good, what do you got, Chad?
Nothing?
Okay,
we'll let you answer that one.
I'll kick it off. I think one thing Leslie did really well was when she was kind of done with it all and was like, I'm not participating in your nonsense anymore. And she kind of just started doing her own thing and let me kind of meander in my darkness alone. I think that forced me to confront myself quicker, and which forced me to seek a solution quicker. Mm-hmm. When I had the comfort of her attention, even if it was negative attention, when I had the comfort of her attention and all those things, I was feeding off of it, and it kept me sick. So her kind of going like, I'm not getting high with you no more. I'm not going to co-sign your bullshit anymore. I'm going to live a great life. And that was like a major shift. So that would be something she did. So I would say, yeah, do that. That was big for me.
Yeah. I was also going to go the detachment route, you know, because for me, that was the kick in my butt was, you know, not that my family ever enabled me or, you know, like, they weren't co-signing anything. They weren't enabling me. They weren't encouraging me in any kind of way. But when it became like I'm not welcome here anymore, you know? And I think that's like the hard part, you know, 'cause I've been on both sides of the coin, like the loved one of an addict and the addict with loved ones. And so the only thing that I have ever seen work is the detachment, either get out, do your own thing. You know, just stop caring outwardly.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and which is, it's hard to do when you love someone to stop, you know, wanting to help and just be there and catch them when they fall. But I only got better when someone finally let me fall.
Ditto is not an answer, Chad.
Yes. Well, my answer is exactly the same. I mean, kind of.
Synonyms are not accepted either.
Not exactly the same, but like, yeah. If I had, I'm thinking of my mama because that's the only loved one that was like through there with me through all of it. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Not necessarily like a partner, but a loved one was my mom, and it was a lot of enabling that she didn't realize she was doing. You know what I mean? She was just a mother loving me, so I took advantage of that. You know what I mean? Like not like I lied, cheated, and stole everything she owned, but like I knew how to manipulate that and continue running rampant. So if I could tell my actively using self, wait, what was the question?
Yeah, well, you're close.
Yeah, if I could tell my loved ones in my active using days, right? So mm-hmm. if I could tell her that, I would say, fucking stop enabling me and force me to do better.
Yeah.
Because that's what ended up happening in the long run. You know what I mean? It went through jail and court and a lot of heartache, but that's what it took.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
Les, can you tell D'Antonio to either talk in the far room or lower his voice because he's distracting me? Oh. I'm not sure what's happening out there. I can't tell. Liam, do you have anything? Any? Do you want to contribute to that answer? For yourself? Let's give Dylan a chance to swap to the audience camera.
Yeah. I mean, no, I don't have anything to add.
No?
No. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't know I was...
Well, for you, like, what did your loved ones do that helped you to turn and begin living in a new way?
I think what Chad just said about, you know, stopping enabling was a big part of it, and just letting me know, telling me that, you know, what I was doing wasn't acceptable, you know, anymore. I mean, in a way, people were saying that for a long time to me, but at a certain point, I think it definitely continued to get worse, like, you know, what I was doing, and eventually, I think it was more of the withdrawing away from me that had more of the message than the telling me that, I'm screwing up. Because, I mean, they told me that for a long time, and it just never registered, but when people started pulling away from me, that's when it started to get through to me a little bit.
I like that distinction. It's one thing to keep saying it, and you think that you're doing something by saying it, mm-hmm. but saying it ain't
cutting.
At least
ain't sinking in.
Yeah, like your action has to line up with your words, you know, because you can tell someone. That was like for me, you know, the first time I got sober, I had so many people telling me to go to meetings, I had so many people telling me to like figure it out, get right. But the second time I got sober, I only had one person who. Like my aunt, she gently reminded me that programs exist. Didn't tell me to go, didn't force anything on me. She just was like, here's some resources if you want them. And eventually it was, you know, with the rest of my family drawing back, you know, being like I said, like the not being welcome, you know, they were sick of me. They told me they were sick of me. And then when I could sense it too, I'm like,
yeah.
What are those resources? Thank you so much. I love you.
Right. Yeah. Then you were willing to take the action.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. Can we answer that good?
Yes.
Hold on. I have to read them in my head first.
Okay.
Can you say the need to control the way you feel is also addictive too?
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. That's an emphatic.
That's all I got now is feelings, you know? So, yeah, I want to feel good all the time, you know? I don't like feeling bad or sad or...
Well, sometimes that feels nice.
Well...
Addicted to the misery.
That's true. That's even, like, more sinister. That took a long time to break. Like realizing I would create my own chaos, you know, like, or people would say, how are you doing? And I'd say, technically, I'm doing fine. You know, my brain doesn't know that everything's okay, right? So I was, like, addicted to that, to conflict and chaos, because I think there was a part of me that really thought that's what love was. Like, love meant, love had to be hard. Right. Love meant fighting. Love meant conflict and then getting back together, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I had to unravel a lot of that from my childhood of, like, being kind of programmed in this way growing up, how I grew up, to think that that's what love looked like. Love looked like yelling and screaming and then reconciling, and it looked like it had to be hard, because every relationship that I'd had, not just romantic, but any relationship, was always full of conflict. And so here I get sober, and it's almost like I was so long like this automatic autopilot of creating chaos in my life. You know, nowhere near the chaos would create if I went and got a bag of dope.
Right.
But I could still create chaos, and it was almost like it took a long time to realize, oh shit, like, I'm like, not only am I baiting people that I have relationship with, it could be work relationships or partnerships with people that I might be working with, certainly romantic relationships, that I would be baiting people into trying to meet some expectation that I wasn't communicating. Mm-hmm. Because I was really, I felt more comfortable in that dissident frequency resonance than I did, you know. I had a sponsor who would tell me, peace feels like boredom when you're not used to it.
Yeah.
So I would get bored, and then, you know, it was all subconscious, and then I would create chaos or find something to be really upset about, mm-hmm, or worry about, just because I was addicted to that. So, yeah, thanks for giving that a roots there.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, like, you know, I've had mental health struggles my entire life. So I learned real early how to self-medicate. And so even, you know, in sobriety, dealing with the fact that I don't feel right all the time, and there's not necessarily a rhyme or reason. It's just my brain has always been like this, and learning how to accept, like, that I feel sad or I feel euphoric, and that scares me, you know, like two ends of the spectrum, and I don't like to be too far on either side. And so then it's like, I need to change this, you know, and like, everything that I do, like, I will do a million things to change how I feel in that moment, like, except pick up, you know, like, today I won't do that, but I still do all these other things, and I get frustrated and talk to other people in recovery, and I'm like, why don't I just feel better? I'm like, I'm doing all of these things and nothing's working. I feel awful. And then, you know, there's always someone wiser than I am to remind me, you don't feel good all the time. You know, one of my mentors has told me, she's like, life sucks, then you die. She's like,
it's tough.
You know, it happens. And sometimes, like, and sometimes that's a comforting thought, being like, yeah, it's hard right now. Life's not beautiful all the time. It has its hard moments. I just have to accept that this is how I feel and it'll pass, instead of controlling how I feel, because I can't.
Yeah, I mean, that's so key, is like, actually, like what they say, feel your feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, geez.
Yeah. It's not easy. It's not fun. I heard that same thing that you said at a meeting just a couple weeks ago, and a person said, don't mistake peace for boredom. And it's one of the things that really hit. I was like, oh, man. I'm all the time saying I'm bored, I need something to do. Really, I'm just at peace, and I don't know what that feels like. I've never felt that before, like, genuinely felt peace. So I mistake it for boredom a lot. And then I think I'm bored, so I'm looking for something to feel different. Good, bad, whatever, I just want to feel. So it's still very new to me, learning how to control those feelings and manage them and just be okay with being okay.
Yeah.
So,
and that's like a common thing you see people go back out over. You know, it's like when things start getting good, and then they pick back up, and it's like, huh? Like, from the outside, it makes no sense. But, you know, when it's like, okay, well, things are good, I'm calm, things are peaceful. And then that addict brain takes over and it's like, we can't trust this, or we don't deserve this. We, you know, and finds a reason for it to be wrong, that everything is good. And so right. then we control it and pick back up.
Yeah. I had a counselor tell me that, she said, sounds like you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. I said, yeah. She said, well, I got news for you. It already dropped. Like, you know, like, and that was, I, that was hard for me to even grasp, the thought that, like, could potentially my worst days be behind me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's hard to even today to really, like,
yeah,
sure. let that settle in, you know, to think that, because so much is out of my control, yeah. you know. I think there's that driven by 100 forms of fear, right? And so I think that's why we're constantly trying to control our feelings, because it gives us some sense of control, which gives us a sense of certainty that makes us feel like, okay, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next question?
It's okay if you're not okay.
Okay. Actually, do you want to talk about that one on the show?
Uh-oh. They're passing notes on the scene.
Sure. So the question, and so...
Now I'm scared.
This was kind of a thing.
Oh.
All right. There's different words that people will ascribe to a specific relationship. And this is an ancient method of human connection. Some might call it a spiritual mentor or a mentor. Some might call it a sponsor, sponsee. Some might call it a your therapist and your therapizer, or I don't know. What's the word?
Therapizer sounds like a villain.
What was the word that your sister-in-law gave? So there's
sponsor,
probation, I mean, and then probationee.
Probationer.
No, they're probationers. Yeah.
So there's different words that describe this ancient way of mentoring and helping another human being, right? And so in the community of recovery, a lot of people would have the word sponsor for that. But it, essentially, one of the things that I like the words that Dean uses, an old man. An old man showed me the way.
Yeah.
Right? And that doesn't necessarily need to be like a physically way older person. It's someone who's maybe a step or two ahead of you in whatever journey. We're talking about spiritual development. We're talking about psychological development.
Right.
And so... historically, that works best when you have some sort of guide.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question had to do with that.
That's a roundabout way to preface that question.
Yeah.
It was great. I think it was great. Very detailed.
What is a sponsor, and what's the importance of having a sponsor? If you are a sponsor, what are three pieces of advice you give your sponsees?
You want me to go first?
Go ahead.
Oh, you just looked at me, so... So, I mean, you know, piggybacking off of your preface, you know, sponsor is just one of the words for one of the modes of recovery. You know, but for me, having that guidance from another person who's already gone through the early recovery stuff, has established long-term recovery, you know, having someone that can answer my questions, someone who can relate to where I am, like how I'm feeling, what I'm going through, because they have been there and they made it through it sober. That's been for me the ultimate importance of having guidance or a sponsor or whatever word you want to use. And then as far as being that person who guides or sponsors, I mean, I give her advice all the time. I think the most unhinged advice that I gave her was that, you know, life isn't always blowjobs and unicorns, and sometimes you get paper cuts in your asshole. And
what?
It worked.
I get the metaphor.
Yeah, me too.
You know, so it just kind of depends on therapist. The situation. But, you know, like for me, if it's the more unhinged the piece of advice is, the more I'm going to remember. You know, I don't like to take things too seriously. And so for me, like when my mentor is talking to me seriously, I'm just like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
But yeah, just really I think it's more of an importance question than an advice question, because having someone who's already been where you are is the game changer.
But there's a big therapeutic value to like saying things the way you just said it, to breaking it. You know, like I like to do that too with people sometimes, is just say something really off the wall or far out. And I had a counselor in treatment that did the same thing. He would come into the group or into the session and he would make some wild joke or do something. And what I realized is like, oh, like this is like a part of his, maybe it's just the way he is, right? And maybe it's just the way I am, with like a brain that's always thinking of the weirdest thing to say. But what I find is that when you do that, it does kind of like break the pattern. It kind of arrests the person up and goes, oh, you know, and takes them out of them, whatever linear story that they're stuck in. Because usually when people are coming to sit down with one of us or somebody, there's usually a story they're already playing. Mm-hmm. They got this story. And they're going, hey, here's my story. You know, is it real or is it, you know, is it right? Is it true? Is it okay that I have this story? And so if you can break them out of that story for a second, they realize, oh, I'm just a person. Mm. You know, like create separation from that.
Yeah.
What about for you? You have mentors or something, right, don't you?
Yeah, I have several. Sponsors, mentors, and I love how everybody kind of drew back when that question was asked. Like, I don't know what to say, but I think it's important. It's a 12-step thing, and that's kind of what a lot of us do. Me personally, I do many different paths to recovery. I do several different programs, and I have a mentor in each. And I really just look at that as like a trusted friend. It's that simple for me. Like, this is somebody that I trust that I can be genuinely honest with. And it doesn't have to be like a complicated thing. I think when I first came in to any 12-step or any recovery meeting and heard the word sponsor, there was like a stigma kind of that went with that. I was intimidated instantly. Like I was like, oh no, I've heard of a sponsor. I don't want nothing to do with that. Somebody bossing me around, telling me what to do. And it's not. I've learned that it's not really none of that. It's just somebody. It's just an old man with some guidance, and that's what I'm looking for. That's what I came in for, to get some guidance, get some knowledge, and I need it from somebody that's been doing it longer than me, that was in the same spot I'm in. So yeah. I think it has a lot of therapeutic value. And then like y'all both just said, it comes with some jokes and some off the wall shit that sticks with me. That kind of stuff sticks. And I'll remember that person, kind of like you just said, your therapist at treatment, you remember that person for those wacky sayings. I'll never forget Sarah, what she just said about paper cuts on your asshole. I'll never forget that. You know what I mean? It sticks. So it's catchy that way. I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to call my dean. I was in seminary years ago. Another
your,
dean.
I'll call dean? Your dean. I know that was weird.
That like a sounded dean so of romantic. Yeah. Dean, no. Are you watching?
Not that dean.
Dean, can we get you to call in online too?
Although I have called him my dean before.
No. Ooh.
No. Dean as in school, the dean, the person who's in charge, the sponsor, right? The person who's guiding you.
Yeah.
And we've stayed connected, but this was, I don't know how many years ago, 4 years ago or something. I went through that and I needed to call her because I needed specific guidance in that world. And I needed somebody who, and she's great because she's also in recovery. There's a lot of similarities in the stories. And I needed somebody to talk to in that area, right? I'm thankful that I could call that person, because I think right. This is a key piece to the relationship, is you don't have to start at zero with them, right? Like ideally this person is already in a 12 step. They've gone through some of your inventory. They've gone through your story. They know about you. And that's with this person today. I didn't have to start at zero. I could just say, here's what's going on right now.
Yeah.
And she knew me close enough because of going through that training. We spent a long time together that, she knew exactly where I was at. She knows who I am. And I think that's key, right? Yeah. You could get somebody who's further along and could just give you advice. That's a fucking consultant, right? You can pay them $150 an hour and they can give you great consultation.
Yeah.
But what we're talking about, someone who has this intimate knowledge of you, mm-hmm. because in a lot of ways they are you. right? Right. And so they can speak in our language. They can tell us, you know. I had a this week, I had a bad day, and it didn't even occur to me for me to call my sponsor, right? Mm. And as I'm sitting with my sponsor today, I'm like, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I probably should have called you on this bad day instead of like going through the bad day. It just didn't even occur to me, mm-hmm. right? Because maybe I just didn't want to hear the solution. Maybe I wanted to have a bad day.
Yeah. And I think that's like another great thing about being connected into a recovery community, because there are certain things that, you know, that happen, and I'll maybe we'll talk to my mentor about it after the fact, but there are certain things, like as they're happening, there's another person who I know is going to like really be able to drive it home for me. You know, when it comes to like familial issues, you know, they're like, I don't know what to do here. Like, I feel crazy, you know, another person who has similar familial relations and being like, okay, let's unpack that, you know? But that comes from just being involved with the community and meeting yeah. people and getting to know people on that more intimate level.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next question. How are we doing? What'd you say? Sit up?
You're slouching and you look short.
Boss's orders.
How's that?
Nice. It's much better.
Oh, this one's saucy.
Uh-oh.
Is there such thing as love addiction with obsession and dependency?
Whoa.
That's a lot to unpack. That is very loaded.
Dang. Say that for a whole nother show.
Yeah, this is an entire episode.
Can you repeat the question, though? Seriously?
Is there such thing as love addiction with obsession and dependency?
Where'd you get that?
That's three separate questions.
Was that, that feels like AI.
That's literally three. That's three things.
Is this where we cut to the audience and let them answer?
Let's cut to Dylan. Dylan, what do you have? What answers do you have on that one?
Yeah. It cut me down real quick. So the love addiction thing, yes, that is most definitely an addiction. It's a very bad one. It can become the codependency thing comes to mind when I be thinking about that, man. I like early, like what you said, Christian, when you don't really know what love is, that's the shit we get addicted to, the stuff that we misconstrued as love until we really learn what unconditional love is. We think it's those feelings we got deep down, you know. We want to be dependent upon somebody. We want to have somebody that we can get addicted to, you know. And that's a lot of that stuff is an active addiction. You know, it coincides with drug use, but then like later on, you know, even out of active addiction, sometimes when we can't have those drugs, we don't get those drugs, the codependency comes after that. And yeah, you can much definitely get you can get addicted to love, but until you finally really understand the true meaning of love, then that becomes a you know, it changes the game for you. You know, it's not a bad thing, but you know, I wouldn't say addicted, but like it says in AA, you know, love and tolerance in the big book. You know, we gotta have love and tolerance for the fellow man, and if we ever lose those, then we're much closer going back out to relapse. But yeah, thanks for letting me chime in.
That's a good answer. I think we'll just go with that one.
Yeah, ditto times three.
Moving along.
I'd like to just say something.
Okay, go ahead.
Because it is kind of weird, like, how can you be addicted to love? Right? Love is, like, good, right? Like, God is love. Like, yeah. Love, like, who doesn't need more love, right?
There's
like,
a whole song about it.
All you love, need is love, love, love.
Lots of songs about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's literally a song called Love Addict. I grew up on it.
Might as well face it. You're addicted to love. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So it's weird to say that it exists because it's kind of like not quite accurate, I think. Mm-hmm. What I think what it really is it's the inability to feel it's the inability to accept oneself as they are.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I lack the ability to be okay with me as I am, that I need something external for me. And if that something is a someone, right, then that's where it becomes addictive. Right. Because I'm looking for somebody else to it's not to say that you can't have a relationship with someone who kind of makes you whole in a sense. Like, I think we're designed for community and those kind of things. But there are parts of ourselves that are meant for us. And we need to be okay with those parts of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And if whatever those parts are, you have to search yourself. And whatever that part of you is, you need to be able to sit with that part of you and be okay without having somebody else. That's where I think where love addiction and the obsessive nature and all of that. And it's really nuanced, because what looks like just a good, healthy relationship, you know, can really easily slip into, you know, a dependency.
Well, so. It kind of sounds like to me, addicted to maybe relationships or a partner. Because I know, like, when I first got sober, I had that giant void, the drugs were taken away. Like, what do I fill this emptiness with? And so I'm the type, I'm addicted to anything that feels good, whether it be drugs, alcohol, women, money, gambling, sex, whatever. I just want to feel different. I just want to fill that hole that's in me, and I didn't know how to. So I don't know if I would call it addicted to love, but addicted to relationships or women, you know what I mean? Like, definitely kind of fits that category for me. Yeah. So, and I'm just now learning, you know, months and months later, like, what real love is. You know what I mean? Because like y'all said, it was foreign. It was foreign to me other than, like, childhood. But I used and partied so long from such a young age, I don't think I ever truly experienced, like, mature adult emotions at all. Like, I think I skipped from childhood to adulthood without going through any of it. Truly, you know what I mean? Like, there was some present in school and stuff like that, but I never, you know, always had a way out of it. I always had a way to cover it up. So it's mm-hmm. all still new, and it's easy to get addicted to anything that feels good for me. So
yeah
all
right, do you want to tackle it or you want to move on?
I mean, what what came to my mind reading that question was, like, you know, is it love or is it lust? Because that's like, yeah. You know, if you think about being addicted to love, it's like, okay, well, what's the aspect that you are addicted to? The part that feels good. I'm drawn to this person. That's lust. Like, you know, just like, they make me feel good, so I want them. It has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with you. And then there's that piece that you brought up about, you know, not being comfortable with yourself in one aspect or multiple aspects. And so seeking that comfort through another person, like, for me, it's like validation. It's like, there are parts of me that I can't accept, so I look for other people to accept them, because if they can accept them, then I can accept them. But I have to be able to pull that from within, or else I'll never be, you know, I'll always be disappointed. I'll always feel something lacking, because there's parts of myself that are for myself that I haven't learned to embrace and accept and love.
Yeah.
That was good.
That's really good. And I think a key piece would be to say that no matter where you are on your journey, you know, is what?
I'm like, he's snapping, so I'm thinking, like, he's calling me. But
oh.
Oh. Leslie, if anybody calls you by snapping at them, you call me, and I will come punch them.
That's right. I want to preface, like, to say that, like, wherever you are in this, like, if you're at the point where you're just not getting high anymore, and then that's a great place to be. Like, start where you are. Be where you're at. That's the key thing. Be where you're at. And, like, I don't want to make someone feel like, because wherever you are, so I think it takes time, right? And where I am sitting with this now, I won't be in this place, right? And where you are, both of you today, right now, you're not going to always be there. And so it's like, it's called emotional intelligence. And in the beginning, we're not very emotionally intelligent, and that's okay. right? We all know it. We all get it. And it's fine. And ideally, as you progress, you become more emotionally intelligent. Any kind of spiritual or psychological development, I think people sometimes will get to a certain place in it and go, okay, cool. That's it. I'm not growing beyond this. Mm-hmm. That's harmful. If you're continuing to expand and get some emotional intelligence, then you can just let that take its time, however long that takes, as long as you're moving in a direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to make someone feel bad because they're like, oh my God, like I love my dog so much. It's the only thing that loves me. Like, okay, that's, look, if that's all you got right now, cool. Like, you know, we're not telling you you need to go to Dogs Lovers Anonymous.
I mean, okay? Unless.
I mean, maybe. Maybe. But no. No.
So moving on. Next question.
The logo is a jar of peanut butter.
Christian.
That's awesome.
We just came up with a new program.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
I'll put it on the meeting schedule. It's coming up.
Yeah, we'll add that to Most High's meeting schedule.
Yeah.
I'm in danger. This is not a safe place anymore.
So, since I mentioned that, we'll have a meeting schedule at the end of July for anybody that's watching. Just a little side note. Carry on.
Hurry. Quicker you ask the question, the better it is.
What was rock bottom for you, and what did rock bottom teach you?
Chad, why don't you kick this one off?
Oh, man. Well, you know, rock, they say the bottom's different for everybody. My bottom came and then it got lower and it got lower and it got lower. You would think most people that know me or people that have seen my story or even heard it, you would think like losing a leg in a car accident because of drugs and alcohol or lack thereof would be the bottom. But nah, I kept digging. As long as I had a shovel in one hand, I was going to keep digging until I hit the center of the earth, until I hit pavement. And so the bottom for me came much, much after that. After I was still fighting, I wasn't ready to surrender. I still had just a little bit of fight. So I kept going, I kept digging, and the bottom kept getting deeper and deeper. And then I was forced to sober up in a jail cell with one leg and a walker. And that's when it really hit different. You know what I mean? Like what am I doing in my life? Who am I? Who have I become? I'm hopping around in here on one leg. I got to ask people to get my lunch trays for me and hope they don't steal my food. You know what I mean? Like being in jail with one leg was the bottom for me. And, that kind of forced me to do some self-reflection and figure out what I need to change to do better. So what did I learn from it? I learned that I didn't like who I was. I learned that I had to own my problems. I had to take responsibility for my actions and do something different if I wanted something different. If I wanted better, I had to do better, you know?
Clip that.
Clip it.
Okay, you win on rock bottom.
No, it's not a competition. You made me go first.
I didn't know you were going to go that deep. I was like,
I told you the bottom.
I got nothing down after that.
You know? Come on, man. Somebody got something.
I would say...
He said, clip it.
Clip you it. Get to pick. I mean, you get to choose what your rock bottom is.
Very true.
You know?
Ooh.
You have a say in that.
I love that.
You know, for me, it was that defining moment of, I think I had a couple of them, but I think there was a defining moment when, to the first question we asked, right? And when my wife looked at me with pity, you know, like, oh, you poor soul. And, you know, I'm old school dude, you know, so this is not the way you want your wife looking at you. And that was like a moment of like, oh, shit, like I got to do something. And the next one was I told my family thought I was at work. My work thought I was at home sick, and I was getting coked out at some budget hotel, like a cheap Timu Charlie Sheen. And just sitting there going,
still winning.
peeking out the blinds going, oh, I can't keep this up. Like, I could keep this up, but I'm not willing to live the life I'm going to have to live to keep this up. And that was, I think, that was the internal click where I went, I got to do something. Because I could see clearly, like, because for me, like, working was important because that's how I got my money and that's how I got my drugs. And if that was going to go away, then what was I going to have to do to continue? And I was just like, yeah, I can't. I don't want to go down that road. I could see where it goes. And that was my internal rock bottom. I was like, yeah, no. I got to pivot now. Yeah.
Kind of like a spiritual bottom where you just completely empty. That's kind of where I was at too, physically and spiritually, just empty, drained. Like I didn't have any fight left. I didn't have any love left. I didn't have any give a fuck left. I was just empty of everything. I was literally at the bottom of the bottom of the bottom of the bottom.
Yeah.
I think my favorite way that rock bottom's been put is bottom's when you stop digging. Second after that is the only bottom for people like us is the grave. That's when you stop. And because for me, I didn't have like a, you know, like when I got sober, there was no defining event. It was just like an accumulation of all of the things. Because for me, I got addicted to the bottom getting lower and lower and lower. And eventually it became a game where I was like, how far down the rabbit hole can I fall? It was like that shock factor coming from a good family with like the Christian background. And, you know, it's like no one would expect me to be this. And they didn't. It freaked them out. And I loved it. So I was like, how much more can I freak them out? But for me, it was actually an acid trip that brought me back to reality. And living in an extended stay, doing cocaine every night. And then was doing acid frequently. And this one trip, it was by yourself, by myself, in this hotel room.
Sorry, that's how much of a trip it was. You're talking about yourself and whatever to person yourself. That was. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I just had I went to the chiropractor today and they released that stuff back in my brain. I was by myself in this extended stay, which was the worst setup for me. And I just remember thinking, I don't know why I'm laughing, but like, I'm normal.
Sure you are. Of course you are.
But I just remember, like, because I would cry all the time doing the feel-good drugs, and I would just plan my suicides. And so this time I wasn't planning my suicide. I had this moment of clarity where I said, I am a person. My life has meaning. What I've been through is relevant, and I'm ruining my life. Mm-hmm. And, I know that because I took a selfie on Snapchat and typed that out and saved it for myself for the next morning.
Nice.
And I never did drugs after that. And that started my progression into sobriety because I didn't cold turkey anything. I slowly worked my way back. So there was no definitive bottom, but that was a defining moment. And I'm not condoning doing acid to get sober.
Yeah. What a cool bottom.
Yeah.
That beats my story. That was way cooler.
This message has been brought to you by the scientists of 1957.
Yeah. I think Bill Wilson would approve.
All right. That's good. That's a pretty profound moment.
Yeah.
All right. Next question, and I think we got time for a couple more, and then we're going to wrap.
Let's shuffle these up. A lot more in there. This is a big old question.
Good. We got more questions for part two.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You just had to shuffle them.
Seriously. What is your relationship like with your loved one, kids, and partners now?
Ooh. I'll go. I'll take it.
Go for it.
I'll take it. It's good, man. It's gotten tremendously better. And like I've just gotten back to a place where I can be like reliable and consistent with loved ones and especially my kids, man. Father's Day was what, 2 weekends ago? right? Yeah.
A few weekends.
Yeah. And I was able to go down to Noonan and see my kids, and I had all three of them in one place for the first time in over 3 years. And so that was a big deal for me. And I was able to just be present. Like, I didn't have to pretend to be somebody. I didn't have to worry about, you know, going to the bathroom to keep from getting dope sick or fake anything. Like, I could just be my authentic, genuine self and just chill. We was at a trampoline park. My daughter, she's just turned 15, got her learner's license. She's not my biological daughter, but I raised her for the first 10 years of her life. So we're extremely close. We were. And then, you know, addiction got in the way and life got in the way. And so that relationship is just now getting back a little bit. And I'm so grateful for it. You know, I got to spend time with my kids all in one place and see her at work. She got to drive my little minivan around the parking lot with her learner's license. So that was like that was a big deal for me. Like I could cry just talking about it right now. It was an emotional thing, but it was so beautiful. You know, and then I got my mom is just sold her house, and she's getting ready to make this big move, and it's been very hard for her. But I was the one that was able to like call my uncles and rally the troops, like, hey, we need help. My mom, you know, and pull everybody together as a big family. Still dysfunctional as hell. We were still dysfunctional, but it was cool. Like, it's still exciting to me that I can be that person, that I can be somebody that somebody counts on, or that somebody trusts even to bring the family together. So I love every minute of it, you know, mending these relationships with my loved ones and my kids especially. Shout out to Carly, Cameron, and Carson. Love y'all.
What do you got?
Mine have, like, the relationship with my family has gotten a lot better, for sure. Because I, you know, when I was using, I thought, you know, my family was just so crazy and dysfunctional and just not normal. And when I got sober, I realized that my family is one of the most normal families that I've ever encountered. And I'm the crazy one. but you know, when I got sober, like, I was living with one of my brothers, and then, you know, flew out of the nest, moved to Atlanta, lived there for a couple years, and then life happened, and, you know, so I was like living more than an hour from my family, for the most part, and wasn't around as often and working a lot, and then life happened, and I moved back to my hometown earlier this year. And it was a really interesting experience for, like, to hear my family talk about wanting me to move back home. And, you know, like, because I want to move back to Atlanta, and, you know, still, same state, it's only an hour away. And, you know, just to hear them say, like, no, like, why don't you live, like, in this town, which puts you closer to Atlanta, but still keeps you close to the family. And it's just like, oh, like, I went from not being welcome to, like, no, please stay. Mm. So that's been, I don't know, that chokes me up every now and then.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like to say that everyone around me, their life got better when I got sober, and my life got fucking harder. That's pretty much my answer. Yeah. But everybody, I think, depends on me. I think, and I needed that correcting, you know, of like, I think for a long time I saw that as everyone expects from me all these things. And somebody I was sitting with kind of helped me to see that, to go, well, you know, that means you're just doing a good job at being a father and a husband and a friend. Mm. That people have come to rely on you to show up and to take care of things. And that's not like this negative expectation. That's you actually showing up in people's life, you know? Mm. So that's pretty cool to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. All right. Last question.
Last question.
Pick a good one, Sarah.
Like, with an H. Sarah with an H.
He didn't what?
We're at an hour and 15.
Sorry.
All right, last question.
Oh, it's a big one. What are some of the lies you tell yourself when in active addiction, and what are some of the lies you tell yourself now?
Damn.
That is a hard question to be quick about.
The lies I told myself in active addiction were, I work hard, I party hard. All the bills are paid, so I can do whatever the hell I want with the rest of the money. It's not that bad. A lot of justifications. Mm-hmm. I'm not addicted. Mm-hmm. I'm just having fun. What's the big deal? That was, came up a lot. Yeah. What's the big deal? Yeah, those were lies that I was telling myself.
No harm.
The lies I tell myself now, I think, I don't know, man. I'll be honest. Like, I think that there is, I've begun to understand myself and know myself, you know. But there are still blind spots. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with it is, like, at, you don't, I didn't know I was lying to myself then. And if I am lying to myself now, I don't really know that I'm doing it. That's the problem with it, you know? Yeah. But I think when it does kind of click, you know, in those quiet moments, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You're driving in the car, you turn the radio off, and you're just, and then you hear that thing go, you know, I think maybe you're probably using this as a way to escape how you feel. It's like, turn the radio back on. I don't want to hear that right now.
That was your first mistake, was turning the radio off.
Off, right.
No, no silence, never.
Yeah. So that's the thing about that. That's the importance of community. It's important of having these kind of mentor, mentee, sponsor, whatever relationships, because those people help you in ideally the most gentle way to go, maybe you're lying to yourself here. Is that really? The question I get a lot is, what's your motivation? Mm. I hate that question.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hate the answer. Because mm-hmm. more often than not, the motivation is self-seeking, self-centered, my interests, what can I get out of it? And you know what? It is what it is. It's okay. If that's what it is and that's my motivation, I have to accept that before I can take action and make a change. So yeah. That's my answer.
Me? My turn?
Mm-hmm.
What, lies I told myself in active addiction was not hurting anybody but myself was my biggest one. That I told myself that I couldn't stop because it's not hurting anybody but myself. I'm not hurting anyone but myself. You know, and just all the same ones that everybody tells themselves, like I'm not good enough. I don't know. There's so many. And I don't really know what lies I tell myself now. I've gotten to know myself pretty well, like Christian said. So I don't know. I think I'll pass it to Sarah with that. I don't know.
An active addiction was really similar to y'all's, you know? Like, I got my shit taken care of. Now I can use. I'm responsible. Like, you know, that list could go on. And, you know, I'm not addicted. I'm not, you know, just all of the things. And then in recovery, it's not like a consistent lie that I tell myself, but it's a trap I'll fall into. And it's, I call it the I got this trap.
Mm.
You know, like, well, I won't necessarily reach out about something, or I flirt with the deep end, but tell myself it's okay. I got this. you know, but fortunately catching it before, you know, anything terrible happens, being like, oh, actually, just kidding, I don't got this. But yeah, I think you guys covered the active addiction lies pretty good.
That's a good, I like that, the I got this lie. Yeah. All right, so can we close with our resident normie? please cut to the audience camera. Our resident normie here.
You good?
Yes.
Our household.
What would you, in closing, what would you like to say? You had these questions. Do you feel like we answered them? And what do you have to say to the rest of us, for Festivus?
To the rest of you, thank you for answering those questions. I know just those were difficult questions. And, you know, those are the things that, you know, for normie, of course, that we would want to, very curious about your brains and why you did what you guys did, and trying to understand that. And I know that many years I've tried to understand Christian, and many times he's tried to explain to me it, but I know it's hard, and it's hard to explain that, and it's hard for me to understand it, because I don't, it was, for a normie, it is, very hard to understand why you chose that route. And then it's not just that route, it's just continuing to hurt yourself and to hurt others. And so that's just the stuff that we just go through, but you guys didn't answer the questions really well, and there's more. So it might be a part two, I'm thinking.
Three and four.
And then these are like relevant questions, I think, because a lot of people want to know these questions, I think it's important. So I know these things can be serious here on this podcast, and I don't know. Those are like dumb questions for you guys, but I think that they're...
Not at all.
No,
these are great questions.
Did you guys enjoy those questions?
Some of those were heavy hitters.
I know, because they were trying to understand that. So, but anyway, so thank you for answering
those. This has been the Most High Show. Thank you all for watching. Thank you for listening. Peace.
Wow, that flew by.
It did fly, huh?
Did it fly by for you?